welcome to episode 69 of the Knitting Pretty podcast. It is, It's August 21st, 2016. My name's Em. You can find me on the internet as Knitfast Die Cozy, particularly on Ravelry and Instagram, also Pinterest and Twitter. And you can find show notes for the podcast at emmaknits.net. And there's my blog and stuff there too. And then you can find a Facebook page at facebook.com/emmaknits. There is a Ravelry group for the podcast, which you can find by searching Knitting Pretty Podcast. And I urge you to join as it is a collection of very cool people, and you being one of them, obviously, should join in, right? Yeah, totally. It's where we hold any knit-along thing-alongs that we're doing. In fact, the thing-along is going on there right now. You can check out other episodes or just have a look at the thread there to get an idea of what the thing along is if you haven't participated or haven't, or if you're new to listening to the podcast. Thank you for listening, by the way. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me for a little while. I'm sorry I'm a week late. I was cranky last week, and recording a podcast while cranky is never, ever a good plan. So I didn't. But here I am now, and I have more to show for it on account of having an extra week of crafting time, so that's good. Speaking of the thing-along, so my most recent goal for the thing-along was, well, it's kind of it's an ongoing goal, and the goal is to start getting back some of the things that I had developed into really good routines for myself before the husband had his cancer fun, and I had work start, and all of that. Basically, all of my routines went out the window, and that sucks, because they were good for me, and now they're gone. So my goal, my first one, was getting my bullet journal back going, and I don't really use it as a journal. If you look up bullet journaling, if you're interested in the idea of keeping a daily journal where you record what happened and, you know, express creativity and all that, it is a good medium for that. That's not how I use it. I'm not that into recording, I guess. I don't know. It's just not for me. But what I do is I take the principles of the list-making journal, and I use it as a running to-do list. So I've got a monthly to-do list, and then daily tasks, and I divide them up and check them off as they happen, and it keeps me functioning, and I had really lost that habit, and so I got myself a smaller journal that was easier to take in my purse to work, and I started putting in the effort and forcing myself to update it every night before bed, and in the morning again, checking in with it, and it's been really helpful. It's becoming much more of a habit than it had been, and I'm really grateful for that, and it's really helping me with my organization, because being organized is extremely important to me, and having a day planner type something is really important for me, and I'm just really glad that it's working out. So anyway, I'm calling that segment of the goal good, and the next step is getting back to some sort of exercise. I had been doing really well before everything went crazy, and just completely lost it. Oh my gosh, like, just nothing. No exercise whatsoever beyond, you know, I do put in an effort to park far away from things, and, you know, I don't, where I work, we don't have all day parking, there's not very much of it, so you have to move your car every 2 hours, and I make sure that, you know, I park kind of far away, and I walk, and I don't mind, and whatever, but just very little intentional exercise. So that is my next step for the thing along. I have been biking to work, which has been an exciting adventure. I haven't died yet, so that's a good indicator. And I biked from work to knit night on Friday, and that was very exciting. And then home again, also exciting. I haven't yet biked home from work, because generally I can just throw the bike on the back of the car, but because the husband works at the same place as I do, so but we arrive at different times, so generally I can sneak a ride home. But anyway, exercise. So I'm starting with the biking, trying to make that a real part of my life, and I'm hoping to get regular dog walking happening again, because I'm sure it would help my poor crazy dog to have more exercise. Although, you know, they say that you can get a dog tired. You can exercise them till they're tired and then they behave better. I have literally never been able to run this dog down. I walked him once for 3 hours and got him home and let him off the leash, and he started tearing around the house like he'd just been stung by 1,000 wasps. Like, he's nuts. I don't know how anyone could ever get this dog out of energy. I think the only thing I could do would be to starve him and then exercise him, but that wouldn't be ethical or yield a very pleasant pet. Anyway, on that note, I hope you're doing well with your thing along goals. Come check in the thread and tell us how you're doing. It's a wonderful place of honesty and accountability, and I really appreciate other people's contributions, and I hope you are enjoying it too. Okay. Let's move on into the actual knitting, crafting, whatever else-ing podcast. In my past, I have some finished things. I made 2 sewn projects. The first is a shirt. It's the Aster shirt by Colette Patterns. I have made 3 of these now, including this one. And the fabric for this is pretty much my favorite fabric ever. It is a... well, the actual fabric, it's... the print is my favorite. The fabric, not so much. So the print is a dark navy background with sort of somewhere between mustard yellow and brown cats. Little silhouettes of cats with bows on their heads or necks. They look like the little girl cat from the Aristocats, but in brown and in silhouette and with bows. So cute! Ah, I love it. Anyway, I made the short sleeve version, I was going to make the flutter sleeved version, but this fabric is extremely staticky and flutter sleeves move around a lot, which will just make the static worse, so I just went with the short sleeve. They've got a cuff on them, not like a workable cuff, but just a, I don't know, like a binding, an interfaced bound cuff. So anyway, I finished that, and I've worn it a couple times, and it's great. The only thing is, it's very staticky. And my trick for reducing static in the clothing I'm wearing, and I really don't actually know if this works, or if I just think it works, and therefore I ignore that my clothes are static to me, but I really think it does work, is I carry a dryer sheet in my back pocket. Not a used one, fresh one. And when things start getting staticky, I step into a more private area, such as a washroom. And then, if you, like, rub down the inside of your clothes with the dryer sheet, you could do the outside, but that would leave white crap all over your clothes, and you don't want that, particularly with a navy blue shirt. But yeah, I just sort of, like, wipe the inside of the shirt with the dryer sheet, and for some reason, whether it's because it leaves a little bit of residue behind that reduces the static, or because it somehow reduces the static in some other way, I don't know. But it seems to make the shirt hang again instead of clinging to me. And it really does seem to work. I don't know if it would work just as well to use anything else. I think I read the dryer sheet tip in a Cosmopolitan when I was like 15 years old, and it stuck in my head, and so here we are. And it seems to work, so try it. If you have a staticky thing that bothers you, maybe it works. I mean, dryer sheets are supposed to reduce static in your load of laundry, so it follows that maybe they actually have something about them that helps rather than just being a thing. I don't know. I don't know what it does, but it does seem to help. It doesn't leave much in the way of a residue on the clothes. I have no allergic reaction to it, which is good because it would be against my skin. And so it just seems to work. I would recommend an unscented dryer sheet, otherwise you're scrubbing yourself in, like, laundry perfume, which is not, tremendously pleasant, I suppose. Anyway, so that's my tip for static, and so that's the main problem with this fabric, which is I believe it's 100% polyester. I think they called it a rose skin. It's like a peach skin is fabric that's been, it's got a bit of a nap on it, so it's kind of fuzzy. And this isn't fuzzy, but it does have a very muted rose petal textured surface to it, which is really neat. The only thing is that this particular fabric, I have worked with other prints on the same fabric that have been a little bit nicer, but this one's a little bit shiny. And for some reason, the shininess of it just makes it look a little cheap, which is too bad because the kitties are so cute. But anyway, it's a cute shirt and I like it. I did neglect to stay stitch the neckline, and it stretched out a little bit while I was sewing it, and so one side of the neck doesn't fit as nicely as the other. I can make it work if I just kind of flatten it out, but it kind of bulges outward, unfortunately. But other than that, it's a good fit. It's a good shirt. I like it a lot, and I can control the static with a dryer sheet. The second thing I finished was a Seamwork pattern, which is also a subsidiary of Colette Patterns, and it's the Adelaide dress. I've made one of these before in a cotton tencel denim. Like, it looks like denim, but it's obviously a little bit unusual on having tencel in it. This one is a cotton linen blend that I had reserved for a Seamwork Hayden top, and the Hayden is kind of like a woven t-shirt with a keyhole at the back neck, and otherwise it's fairly simple. It's blocked, like it has different blocks, a front and a bottom and two sides basically on the front, and the back is similarly proportioned, so you could color block it or put in lace on the seams or whatever. I was just going to make it plain, and in this fabric, which is I think like 55 cotton, 45 linen, it's a sort of earthy looking, I mean, not the color. The color is a sort of pale gray blue, more on the gray than the blue, but it's very homespun looking. It's slubby and, just kind of textured, I guess. It looks a little bit rumpled even when it's ironed smooth because the yarn that it's woven from has, quite a lot of texture to it, and it's a weave where all the threads going, like all the warp threads are blue and all the weft threads are white, but, you know, not quite, like navy blue and white, but grayish. I don't know, it comes out to a grayish blue, but the threads are bluish and whitish. Anyway, so it's a very casual, homespunny looking fabric. And I just decided that a t-shirt in that fabric would look too casual for what I wanted. And I'd be better served by making that shirt in something more crisp or more lacy, like maybe an eyelet lace or something. So I decided to see if the piece of fabric I had would be enough for this dress, and it was, which was very exciting for me. So that was just today. I got a sort of bee in my bonnet that I decided I had to make a new dress. So I did. And being a Seamwork pattern, it's meant to go quite quickly, and I was able to get it finished in a couple of hours. Adelaide calls for snaps it's a shirt dress, a sleeveless shirt dress with no collar or anything. It's very simple. It calls for snaps to do up the front, but I have gone with buttons both times, and I'm happy with that choice. I looked for snaps at the fabric store today, and I just didn't see any I liked for this fabric, and just in general, I don't know, they just didn't sing to me. I would have to probably look online to find the right snaps for my, I don't know, taste, I guess. And so I went with buttons, and so I had on hand some reddish-orange buttons with a little bit of an iridescence to them and kind of flowers carved into them, but little tiny buttons. And so the combination of the gray-blue and the reddish-orange is just very nice indeed. I am a big fan of blue and orange. I feel that they should be used together whenever the opportunity presents itself, and so I was very happy to finally get a use for these buttons, because I know I bought them years ago with, like, no intention of using them. I just thought they were pretty, and so I bought a bunch of them, and I finally found a use for them, so that's nice. The dress looks great, it fits great, it's really comfortable, it's really lightweight and soft, so I'm hoping that we get another month or so of summery weather, so I'll have the ability to wear it without having to worry about getting cold. And then I think it might be cute with tights on underneath. We'll have to see as the cold weather comes in. So those are the things I've finished. Let's move on to my present. I am still working on my Belmont cardigan, which is a pattern by Gudrun Johnson, who is the Shetland trader, and the pattern is beautifully written, and I strongly recommend her patterns because, well, at least this pattern, and presumably her other ones, because this one is written really well, and the sweater itself is well proportioned and cleverly designed, and, you know, it's all good. It's got a lot of at-the-same-time kind of instructions for the, while you're doing the decreases in the shoulders, as I talked about last episode. So if you want to hear about the difficulties I had with that, go ahead and listen to episode 68. So it's not a beginner pattern, certainly, that you have to maintain a lace pattern while also doing other things, and there's no instructions on how to maintain that lace pattern. You just have to kind of do it. But other than that, it's so far, fantastic pattern. I've not run into anything about it that was wrong or incorrect or badly written. I have finished now almost all of the first sleeve. So that leaves just a second sleeve and a neckband, and I'm done. I also got buttons for it today. I'm using a really, really bright, hot pink, like a dark hot pink, the yarn is. And so the buttons I got are kind of a black, but with like a matte black with an iridescent purpley pink in them. And so they're perfect. I'm actually really happy with them, particularly because buttons can be so expensive, but going to the fabric store and getting cheap plastic buttons, when you can find ones that match your project, which you can't always, but when you can, so cheap. Like, it was like $3 for buttons. So that was very exciting. Anyway, I'm hoping that by the next time I talk to you, this cardigan will be done. I think I've said that several times, but I think this time it's actually an achievable goal. I stalled out a little bit and worked on the sewing that I was talking about rather than knitting today because I'm back to some twisted rib for the cuffs of the sleeves, and I'm not a huge fan. But it's okay, it's in the round, so at least I don't have to do twisted purls right now. That helps. I've also been working on my socks that I'm knitting for my husband. I've talked about them many times, but I wanted to mention a new development in the sock knitting. And that is that I had spoken quite highly of my Knitter's Pride, I believe, carbons, the carbon fiber needles, and they're double-pointed needles, and the body of the needle is black carbon fiber, and then the tips are, shiny metal. Something plated with something. I don't know. Nickel plated, probably? Anyway, up until a couple days ago, well, weeks, I suppose, these were my favorite needles for socks. I love them. I love the carbon fiber. I like the way that it's light and just the right temperature in your hands. And it's, I don't know, it's got enough grip that they never slip out of your knitting, but they're not so much grip that it doesn't move along in a, you know, tidy fashion. It's a great material for a knitting needle. And then the tips started falling off these needles. And yeah, I could crazy glue them back on, but I don't want to, and I don't feel like I should have to when I think 3 of the 5 DPNs, the tips are just falling off of them. Like, I was at knit night, and I'd be knitting, and suddenly the tips were gone, and we had to keep using a phone flashlight to find the tips underneath our table. It was just bloody frustrating, and I'm really frustrated by that. Can you tell? Frustrated? Frustrated is the word. I feel frustrated. Because they're otherwise good needles, and I know that if I contacted Knitter's Pride, I know they have a pretty good reputation for customer service, and they'd probably fix it for me and whatever. But I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't want to have them break and then have another, then get another pair and then have that pair break and always have to think about having, like crazy glue on hand to work with my needles. So I'm just probably going to throw them out and transfer the sock onto Magic Loop because I have some needles for that. But still, what a piss off. And it's too bad because I was making really good progress on the socks before the freaking needles kept falling apart. I'm increasing for the heel gusset right now, so. Anyway, frustrated. In my knitting future, the second, I believe, issue of Stranded magazine came out. It's Mild Weather 2016. Stranded is a an e-magazine, an electronic digital magazine. I'm trying to find the right word. It's not in print. It's digital magazine, and it is run by, hosted by, I don't know, created by Andy Satterlund, who I've talked about before. She designed the Vian cardigan that I knit, and some other people, I think, but she's the main name that caught my eye. And it's a really neat little knitting magazine. I haven't read all the articles in it yet, but it's got good information in it. It's got clever articles. It seems to be well edited and fairly well curated. It's still new, so there's always going to be growing pains for any new publication, but overall it's pretty darn slick. It's got a nice website, and I think the magazine costs $16 American, and you get 8 patterns. And the first issue of the magazine, I didn't need to make any of the patterns. It's not that they weren't nice, they just weren't me, and that's fine. Not everything has to be catered to me. But this one is lovely. Lovely, lovely, lovely. And while I don't think I would actually knit enough of the patterns in it to buy it for the $16, I'll probably wait until the patterns go up for individual sale, which happens a year after publication. So if you want the collection for the greatly discounted rate of $16 for 8 patterns, then you have to buy it within a year of when it comes out. And I might still do that, because even if I bought 2 of the patterns, I would have purchased the magazine. And I don't know how much they're going to be when they go individual. It's not my place to decide. But anyway, it's a great magazine. I suggest you check it out. I will link it in the show notes if you haven't got the ability to just Google it for yourself. Which it's fine if you don't. But I mean, oh, that sounded so facetious. Go ahead and Google it, or it's linked in the show notes. Whatever works best for you. But there are 2 patterns that really caught my eye. And the first is called Salal, and that's by Andy Satterlund. And she is an expert in really cute cropped cardigans. And really cute cropped cardigans are kind of my jam. I really like them. I'm working on one right now. The last sweater I made was one. I have several in the queue. They're awesome with dresses and skirts or high-waisted pants if you're into that, which I would be if I didn't hate them. I like the way they look on other people, basically. I don't have enough of a butt for high-waisted pants, I think is the problem. Anyway, Salau is a beautiful cropped sweater. It's done, I believe, in a worsted weight, which a lot of her sweaters are, which means they knit up quite quickly. And it has a lace panel that it makes a lace yoke that goes from the point of the shoulder down to just above the center bust, so it's angled downwards, and then just across the entire top front of the sweater. And so it has a kind of 40s look to it, or 80s, I suppose, but the 80s fashion of the 80s harkened back heavily to the 40s. It gives a very, very broad-shouldered silhouette. And the great thing about a broad-shouldered silhouette, unless you have extremely broad shoulders and don't want to show that off, which, if you have broad shoulders, you should rock it because they're awesome. But whatever, it's your choice. Do your thing. This broad-shouldered silhouette makes a waist look narrower, and then if you wear something with that makes your hips look wider, like a poofy skirt or dress or whatever, it makes for a very dynamic silhouette. And that's a lot of what can make looking at a body or an outfit interesting, is dynamism, is change and movement. And so it's not that an hourglass is inherently superior, because it's not. You can have movement and changes in shape that aren't hourglass body shaped. But if you have things where things go from wide to narrow, or from dark to light, or changes in texture that change dramatically. That's the kind of thing that makes an outfit or a body or a person or a painting or a house interesting to look at, is changes that keep your eye moving around. And so the way this sweater has this wide-shouldered silhouette that then angles down into the bust also makes your boobs look good, if that's something you're into. It just keeps the eye moving over the body and is very flattering, but also very interesting to look at. And I think in the right colored yarn, it could just make a really useful piece of clothing. I also like that it's called salal, because salal is a plant that is local to here, and many places near here. It's also very popular in bouquets of flowers as a filler. It has nice, shiny, waxy green leaves that are pointed oval shape, and then it has these beautiful berries. They're kind of furry looking. They kind of look like weird furry blueberries, kind of. The ends are kind of hollow. They're hard to describe, but they're very distinctive. And salal berries taste amazing. They're kind of gritty because they've got the texture almost of like a miniature fig. They're just a lot of seeds in them, basically, and a lot of peel. But they taste like a really, like a blueberry and a blackberry had a weird fuzzy little baby. I'm not selling you on this, am I? Salal berries taste really good. And my grandmother used to make salal berry jelly. And I love salal berries. They remind me of my grandmother, who I was very fond of. And yeah. So I like that pattern a lot. The other pattern in the Stranded magazine that I love and I would like to make is called Twisp, and it's by Emily Wessel of Tin Can Knits. Tin Can Knits is, of course, the dynamic new duo of Emily and Alexa Ludeman. They're out of Vancouver, and they make awesome patterns that go very frequently from baby sizes all the way to adult men's sizes, if the pattern lends itself to typical menswear, but generally at least to adult women's sizes. Alexa's is a sweater, which I like quite a lot, but I don't think I would wear. But Emily's is this hat, Twisp, and it is a colorwork hat. It's a toque. I believe it has a pom-pom. I'm trying to picture it in my head right now if it has a pom-pom. If it does. If it doesn't, it should. And it's colorwork, and it's done in a cream and a sort of greeny mustard golden yellow brown color, which is, as you know probably by now, I can't say no to that color. And a blue, and I believe another green. Anyway, it's cute. It's a very, very simple colorwork pattern. It's the sort of thing that would make a very good first colorwork project. It doesn't have a lot of memorizing, it doesn't have a lot of reading the chart over and over again. You can kind of memorize it pretty quickly because it's a simple repeating diamonds pattern. It's very, very simple. But it's classic, and it's slight in the colors that it is. It's slightly retro, and it's just a good colorwork hat pattern. I like it a lot. The other thing I wanted to say about this Stranded magazine is the model they used is gorgeous. She has the most spectacular blue hair and the sparkliest eyes and flawless makeup. And she's just beautiful. And the model that they used last issue is also gorgeous. Like, they are using models who aren't your typical slender, pretty girl. But, I mean, they're still beautiful women. Gorgeous. But they're just a little bit outside of the normal realm of what you tend to see for a model for knitwear, or anything else for that matter. So that's fun. It's nice to see difference in body shape and in style. And so, yeah. Anyway, check out Stranded magazine and have a look at that Salal sweater, because damn, it's super cute. And the Twist hat, and Alexa's pattern, I think it's called Elva, is beautiful too, and so many beautiful. So nice. So anyway, I thought for show and tell this week, I would just give a quick chat about ease, because I know ease is one of the hardest parts of making a knitted garment or a sewn garment or really anything. It's the hardest part of buying clothes because ease is essentially what makes your clothes fit or not fit, as the case may be. And if they don't fit, then you won't wear them. You won't like them. They won't make you happy. They won't bring you joy. And they won't make you look good. But what is fit, really? Because something can be really oversized and fit, or something can be really tight and fit, but certain things, if oversized, will not fit, and vice versa. So, ease is how much space there is in the garment other than what your body takes up. So if your sweater is 48 inches around and you are 40 inches around, then that sweater has 8 inches of positive ease. If your sweater is 36 inches around and you are 40 inches around, then your sweater has 4 inches of negative ease. So it can be positive or negative or neutral, in that you can have zero ease. If you're 40 inches around and your sweater's 40 inches around, then it has zero ease. And that's the main thing to remember. Positive ease is if the thing is bigger than you. Negative ease is if the thing is smaller than you. Obviously, if it's going to have negative ease, it's going to have to stretch. You can't put on a piece of clothing that doesn't stretch that has negative ease. It will not go on. It will not do up. You won't be able to get it over you. It's just not going to happen. That's called too small. But there are lots of reasons to have ease, different amounts of ease. But the conventional wisdom about ease in particularly garment sewing says that you should have a fair bit. I believe the conventional wisdom for women's clothing is 4 inches of ease, and men's is up to 10 inches of ease. Now that is a lot of ease, and that has kind of gone by the wayside, particularly as fabrics have become more high-tech, as stretch fabrics are getting higher and higher in quality and are being used for more and more things, as you can have stretch in woven fabrics now, and they snap back nicely and behave themselves really well. It used to be that you needed ease in a pair of jeans because they didn't have stretch. Now most jeans have stretch in them, and you don't need as much ease. So ease is there for a couple of reasons. The first and most important is so that you can get the piece of clothing on properly. You do need some ease in a garment that has little to no stretch. Otherwise, you won't be able to get it on. The next reason you would have ease is so that you can be comfortable while wearing it. I'm sure we have all put on a sweater, whether we knitted it or some, you know, came from the store or whatever, where you put it on and it looks good, but then you raise your arms and the whole sweater like pops upwards, and then when you put your arms down again, it stays upwards because that sweater is too small. That sweater needs to have more ease because you can't move comfortably in it. Even if you can get into it and you can feel comfortable in it and it looks good, as soon as you move, that's when the ease comes into play. There needs to be enough that you can move your arms, you can move your legs, you can dance, jump, whatever. And certain garments need less ease than others. You do not need as much ease in an evening gown, because unless you plan to, I don't know, get into some sort of James Bond-esque spy fight situation in it, which, you know, happens in evening gowns in movies surprisingly often, but I don't believe happens in real life all that often. You don't do much in an evening gown. In fact, some of them aren't even made for sitting in. So some garments don't have a lot of ease because they don't have a lot of wearing requirements. But say a jacket that you're expected to, a ski jacket, for example, that's not going to have stretch in it, but it's going to need a lot of ease because you need to be able to use your arms. You need to have full range of motion. So there's going to be more ease in a ski jacket than there is going to be in an evening gown, even though the fabrics might be just as stretchy, or not stretchy as the case may be. So wearing ease is really important for movement and for usefulness of a garment. Then the next thing is, and it's the thing that honestly I think is on most of our minds when we're looking at ease in a garment, is how it's going to look. If something is meant to have a lot of ease, it's meant to look oversized, it's meant to look baggy and boxy. A knitted sweater that has really good example of that is called Boxy. It's by Hohi Locatelli. And it has a massive amount of wearing ease. Huge. Like a foot or something. I can't remember offhand, but it's a lot of ease. So it's knit to be way bigger than the body of the person who's going to be wearing it. And it looks flattering that way because it's drapey, because it's got a shape to it that still hints that you have a body underneath it. It looks really nice with that much ease. But there are other things that if you wore 12 inches or 14 inches of positive ease in, would look like you were wearing a garbage bag. So the look of a garment is another major consideration with how much ease. Now, the next decision is when you're making something is how much ease to put in. So if you're knitting, you can get away with a lot more than you can if you're sewing. Because when you're sewing, you're generally sewing with wovens. I mean, a lot of people sew with knits almost exclusively, but let's talk about wovens when we're talking about sewing, because just lump sewing with knits into knitting with yarn, and we'll go from there. So when you're knitting something, a knitted fabric is really stretchy, and so you can have zero ease, and you'll still be able to move just fine in that knitted sweater. There's going to be no problem, unless the fabric is very, very dense. There's going to be no problem in having full range of motion in your shoulders with zero ease. But the style of it might call for more ease, or you might just want to feel a certain way in the sweater, want to look a certain way in the sweater, and so you'll need more ease. You can have negative ease in a knitted garment, and it can look fabulous. It is recommended, I believe, by Amy Herzog, that you have some amount of negative ease in the hips of a sweater, because then it clings to your hips in such a way that looks good. I think that's the reasoning. I haven't actually read the book, her books on fit, but I've heard that through various channels, and it makes absolute sense. A lot of sweater knitting gurus suggest that you choose the bust size of a sweater based on your over bust measurement, so above your bosom, and then that means that there is a little bit of negative ease across the bust if you choose a zero ease sweater. Again, it clings to curves and makes them look nice. The trouble with negative ease, of course, is that you can easily, you can easily fall into your clothing just being too small. I did that a little bit with my Vianne cardigan that I talked about a few minutes ago. It's not too small, but it is almost too small. It has as much negative ease as I could possibly wear at this point without my clothing just being too small. And I think it's got about 3 inches of negative ease. So you want to take into account how you like your clothing to fit when you're deciding how much ease to put in. And part of that is that we all have personal taste. We all have taste in how we like things to look on us. We like things to feel a certain way. And so while a sweater may call for X amount of ease, you may decide to make a size up or down or two sizes up or down from that to get the kind of ease that you like. A lot of times, particularly I've noticed in Interweave magazines, the sweater is shown with zero ease on the model. And then you look at the way the pattern's written, and it's written with like 4 inches of positive ease. And if you just make the pattern as written, it's not going to fit you the way it fits on the model. And that's because if you're looking for a feminine silhouette, the less ease tends to look more that way. It shows off all the curvy lady parts. So that's something to keep in mind with knitted garments and ease, that you can really just choose it based on what you like. Just beware of things being too small, because that's just the worst. With sewn garments and things with no stretch, you do need to keep a little bit more of an eye on ease, because you need that wearing ease that allows for movement. if your sewn clothing has zero ease, you're not going to be able to move in it. If it has buttons, they're going to gape open anywhere you bend or have lumpy bits, you know, wherever that might be. You have to have positive ease in a non-stretchy garment. You just have to. That's how it is. You can't make it with zero ease. So if you're looking at a sewing pattern and it says it's for a 36-inch bust and you have a 36-inch bust, you need to go up a size. Not necessarily a lot, and you can make those decisions based on how you like your clothes to fit. Take out a favorite piece of clothing from your closet and measure it. Make sure that it's comparable. Don't take a stretchy t-shirt out if you're measuring for a non-stretchy dress. That's not a good idea. Find a non-stretchy thing. But yeah, so you can work within those ease amounts, particularly if something's meant to be very oversized. There's nothing wrong with sizing down. Generally, a sewing pattern will have garment measurements on it, which will give you the actual finished measurements of the garment. You can then compare those to your body measurements and decide how much ease is going to be there and how much you really want, and kind of make it work for yourself. The good thing about making your own clothes is you can choose the fit, and get the kind of ease you want. One thing I will say also about ease in store-bought garments, particularly I've found with sweaters lately over the past couple of seasons, oversized sweaters have been a big deal. There's been a lot of them. I have been able to buy sweaters in sizes much smaller than my actual size because they're so oversized. My favorite sweater that I've ever had, like, for the longest time, that I've a purchased sweater as opposed to a knitted sweater, I bought in like an extra small when I was wearing a large, just because it had so much ease worked in that I don't know how it could have possibly looked good on someone small enough to wear an extra small, but it looked great on me, so there was that. So that is something to keep in mind, especially if you like thrift shopping, is check for oversized items in sizes smaller than your own if you are looking for a snugger fit. But, you know, basically you can look outside of your size because a lot of times the wearing ease, particularly in something stretchy, is kind of optional. Whether it's that you want to have an oversized thing fit you a little more closely, then you can get a size that's below yours. Or if you want something that's normally meant to fit closely to fit looser, then you can buy a size above yours. Helps with thrift shopping. Particularly dresses, you can have a lot of success buying clothes that are not actually technically your size in dresses. But yeah, I mean, that's really all there is to ease. Ease, a lot of it is familiarity with yourself and what you like. Now, there's one further complication with knitting sweaters and ease and gauge swatching. If you are swatching, which you should be for a sweater, you can kind of get an idea of how stretchy your sweater is going to be and thus how much ease you can work into it, or negative ease you can work into it, by knitting your swatch, and make sure it's at least 4 inches, but, you know, bigger is always better, and I say that as a complete hypocrite, because I hate making a big swatch. You can get an idea of how much ease you can work into it, or not work into it, by knitting your swatch and washing and blocking it, and then measuring it, and then stretching it and measuring it again. And if you stretch it to, you know, the extent of where you still like the fabric, but, obviously it's bigger than it would be if you weren't stretching it, you can get an idea of how much negative ease you can put in that fabric. And what you do for that, say it's a 4-inch swatch, and you're able to stretch it to a 5-inch swatch. So if your body is 30, let's go with an easy number, 32 inches around the bust, if you have a 32-inch bust, and your swatch is 4 inches and it's got X number of stitches, that's not really important. If you're going to knit your sweater with zero ease, exactly to the size of your bust, then it will be 8 swatches around, essentially, right? Because 32 divided by 4 is 8. If you find that your swatch is quite stretchy, then it, like, say it stretches out 2 inches, then for every 4 inches, you could have another 2 inches of stretch coming out of that. So 2 times 8 is 16. So you could have 16 inches of stretch over the entire circumference of your sweater. That could mean your sweater could bag out quite a lot. So that's something to keep in mind, is that however much your swatch stretches is going to be how much your finished garment stretches, but multiplied out by the amount of times the width of your swatch goes into the circumference of your garment. And so when that's particularly important is if you're knitting a really drapey fabric, say you're knitting an alpaca at a loose gauge and you find that it stretches out a lot, that sweater is just going to bag out on you. And you just need to be aware of that. And if you want it to do that, that's fine. But if you don't, you need to know that that's going to happen. The other thing that comes in really handy, I'm sorry, I have to pause for a minute because I am sitting in my room with my yarn and I just saw a moth go land on my stash. And I am not okay with that. So I'm just going to engage in a little moth murder. There we go. Sorry. Hi, I'm back. The moth is murdered. All's well. All's well that ends well for everybody except the poor moth. It was a clothed moth, so I at least feel justified in the moth murder. Not that I'm worried about my yarn. Clothed moths are just a part of life in this climate. Anyway, the other time it comes into play is if you have a larger circumference, and even if your gauge swatch only stretches, say, a half inch, say it's a really nice tight gauge swatch, and it stretches a half inch over 4 inches. And then your bust measurement is, 52 inches. And 52 divided by 4 is gonna be 3 plus 10 is 13. So half of 13 is 6.5. Math on the spot. That's what I want to be doing. And so your sweater is going to stretch out 6.5 inches. Now that's not too much stretch over 52 inch bust. But if your gauge swatch stretches out an inch, that's 13 inches. If it stretches out 1.5 inches, that's going to be 13 plus 6.5. So you can see how you have to keep an eye on stretch and ease when you're working over a larger piece of fabric, just because that is relevant to the fit. And so I found when I was larger, I would knit sweaters with a lot of negative ease, because when it comes to actually wearing them, that negative ease comes into play over a larger circumference and looks a lot better. When I knit the Vienne cardigan, it was with the same assumptions about negative ease, but on a 36 inch bust, which is a lot smaller than I used to be, and I just assumed that what I liked was negative ease. I didn't realize that what I liked was negative ease over a larger piece of fabric, and so I find that that sweater is too small for my taste. In fact, I like to wear a lot more positive ease now. Not all the time, but I like somewhere between 0 and 4 inches of ease for most garments, knitted garments. And yeah, so I think it's something to keep in mind if you're thinking about knitting a sweater. And, you know, the more you know about the process, the more you know about your preferences, the more you know about your body and about the fabric you're going to be making, the more you can control the outcome. And ease is a huge part of controlling the outcome of your knitting projects. It gives you a look, it gives you a fit, it gives you a wearability. It's really important. So think about ease. Make sure you think about it. It's not something that you can discount. It's not something you can just look at the pattern and say, oh, well, the model has this much. Because if the model's got a 28-inch bust and you don't, that ease is going to fit her differently. It's going to work with her body differently than it does with yours. And so if she's wearing 10 inches of ease, that doesn't necessarily mean you need to. But it might mean that you want to. It's all up to you, and it's part of the wonderful thing about making your own clothes is that you can customize it to your heart's content. But just be aware of the pitfalls of too much or too little ease. You want to be able to get your clothing on. You want to be able to keep it on. Too much ease and it will fall off your shoulders. So yeah, I think that's about all you need to know. But there you go. So let's move on to the final segment. My obsessions over the past 3 weeks now. The first is PB2. Have you tried this stuff? It's powdered peanut butter. Now, before you just turn this off, because that sounds disgusting, it kind of is kind of gross. Well, no, it's not. I don't know. I'm of mixed feelings. I had been wanting to try it. It's something that people use to cut calories, and as I keep track of my calories fairly closely, it was something that I was curious about, because anywhere where you can add flavor without adding calories is bonus food, and I am all about the bonus food, and I do not like my bonus food to taste like ass, because a lot of, quote, diet food is gross. Like, you should never have to sacrifice flavor and happiness for anything short of, you know, significant medical concern. And so, but I was intrigued by this PB2 stuff. So what it is it's peanuts or peanut butter, like peanuts, that have been ground down and crushed so that about 80% of the oil is gone from this sort of soft, slightly damp feeling powder. And they had it on at Costco for like $8, and so I thought I'd buy a jar and just see what it was like, because I couldn't believe, it sounds too good to be true, and in a lot of ways it is. It does not just taste like peanut butter, because a lot of the flavor of a food is carried in the fat that the food comes with, whether it's a fatty steak has a lot more flavor than a really lean one. A fatty peanut butter has a lot more flavor than a really lean one. It's just the way food works. But I don't know, it's interesting. The most successful thing I've had, and you mix it up with a little bit, you mix the powder with a little bit of water, and that's how you get your peanut butter consistency. I wouldn't use it as a peanut butter spread, just, you know, go for the real stuff and use it sparingly if that's your concern. But if you mix it up with a little bit of water, and then you can use it as an ice cream topping, and that is unbelievably good. Not particularly diet conscious, but unbelievably good. Particularly with the chocolate ice cream. But I hear it's really good for use in, like, protein shakes and smoothies and stuff like that. I haven't tried yet. It was disgusting in oatmeal. Just terrible. If you have used it and made it with oatmeal and it's been good, tell me your secrets, because I made it and it, like, I ate it because it was my breakfast and I was at work and, you know, I'd had a late start to my morning and I had no other options. But I only ate it because I had no other options. It was gross. So yeah, if you've made it in oatmeal, I feel like it could be good and I'm just missing something, but ugh. I used it in a peanut noodle recipe. Like it's one of those one pot pasta dishes where you put all your vegetables and your water and your seasonings and your pasta, like wheat pasta, in the same pot, and you cook it down. It makes the sauce as it boils the pasta down. And this one's a Thai peanut pasta one, and I used it instead of peanut butter in that, and it was pretty good. It wasn't as good as normal peanut butter, but for the extreme reduction in calories, which means you can eat a little bit more of it, so you have a more filling meal experience, it was well worth it. The difference in calories with PB2 and normal peanut butter, 2 tablespoons of normal peanut butter is about 200 calories. An average woman should have about 2,000 a day. And the PB2 has about 45. So that's a big difference. So anyway, if you've ever used this stuff, there's other brands of it that it's the same thing. I think Jiffy makes a brand, or Jif, I don't know, whatever fake peanut butter brand it is. I mostly like natural peanut butter, the kind that doesn't even have salt. But anyway, different brands make powdered peanut butter. If you've tried it, if you've found things that you've made with it that you like, let me know. I would love to hear what people use this stuff for, because now I have a jar of it and I feel obligated to use it. And I can't just eat it on ice cream, because that really, really skips the point of, you know, having the fat removed from your peanut butter. Anyway, it's interesting. I think the concept is good. I need more things to do with it. And I don't drink protein shakes. I think they're gross. So maybe they'd be good with peanut butter in them. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, my second obsession was today was Fibrations, which is a local yarn festival. It was really big this year. There was lots of tents. It was really windy this year, and the tents kept trying to fly away, which was unnerving. But lots and lots of wonderful local fiber and yarn vendors, as well as local artisans doing things like needle felting and weaving and whatever else. So it's a very cool festival, and I went down to the market today with my mom and bought a couple of things. I've been saving up for ages because I haven't really felt like I had something to purchase with my discretionary income. And I put a little bit aside every month and then spend it or not as I see fit. And so I had quite a bit saved up, and so I didn't feel like I had really any limits on my spending, but in the end I was fairly moderate. I bought three things. The first is a skein of Caterpillar Green yarns, self-striping, in the festival. I don't know if I said it was called Fibrations. It was the Fibrations special colorway, which is like really, really narrow stripes that blend from a sort of terracotta orangey red through yellowier oranges and through yellow into an acid green into less acidy green into like a bright emerald green. But it's all these short stripes that blend back and forth through colors. And Caterpillar Green yarns are amazing. I'm incredibly lucky to live in the same place as Kat, because her yarns are just wow. Amazing. They're frequently sold out online, but they're well worth watching her social media or getting on her email list to get a hold of some of her yarns, because she dyes self-striping yarn that is incredibly creative and incredibly interesting. She does shawl skeins of yarn that the colors change, like the length of the stripes in these self-striping skeins has been figured out mathematically so that as you knit a triangular shawl, the stripes will stay the same width. That is some mathy genius there. Her yarn is just gorgeous, and it's extremely popular and hard to get, but well worth it. And I'm just really happy that I'm able to go to a place where there are skeins upon skeins of it. It's so nice. So anyway, I was really excited to get that skein. I'm glad that I got the limited edition colorway. If she put a picture on Instagram, if you follow her, of a little shorty sock with this yarn, and it looks so cool. So that's fun. I got another skein of yarn. It's online is the yarns. It's one of the German workhorse sock yarns, and I've used it before in a couple different socks, two pairs of socks for my hubby, and then they also had a bamboo blend that I made into pairs of socks for myself, and they've all lasted extremely well. Very, very durable yarns. And this one is a marled yarn, so it's three plies, and two plies are one color, and then the third ply is another. And the two plies have a slow sort of gradient self-striping shift to them, and then the third one has a very quick changing color change. It's just like all through the rainbow. And the yarn is overall like stripes of yellow and orange and purple and blue, and it's very rainbowy and very pretty, and I really like it, and I love me some simple workhorse sock yarn, so I was really excited to get a hold of this. It looks a lot like, there was a pair of amazing socks that Susan B. Anderson was knitting that were in opal, and it was a marled color, and it had a lot of purple, and it was stripey and gorgeous and like gem colored. And it looks a lot like that, which is great, because that particular color of opal isn't available anymore. That's the thing about opal, is as soon as a color comes across your radar because someone's knitting it, it's been discontinued and you can't get it anymore. The third thing I got was some rolags from a relatively local fiber artisan. Rolags, I guess. They are a spinning prep that is good for woolen spinning. I had bought some from her before, and I hadn't used them because they're so pretty, but I figure if I got these, then I can use the ones I bought last year, and then I'll buy more next year, and then I'll be able to use the ones I bought this year. I just feel like I should never not have some of these wonderful little fluffy fiber tubes. Basically, it's the fibers are all in a horizontal. The fibers are perpendicular to where they'd be going into the spinning wheel, so you get a really lofty, floofy yarn very easily. It's a very pleasant prep to spin from. And the ones I got this time are a mixture of colors. Rather than being like a gradient along the length of the fiber, they are just all mixed up, but it's like dark purples and blacks and a little bit of dark green, little pop of yellow, little pop of blue, little pops of pink. But it's overall this really dark, mostly purpley kind of oil slick of color, and it's luscious. It's only a 1.9 ounces, so I'm thinking it'll make a good contrast color for a color work something or other, a hat or something, but they're just beautiful, and they make me want to spin so badly. They make me maybe want to spin them first and leave the other ones in reserve. I don't know. So pretty. So anyway, that was a lot of fun, and there was a lot of other wonderful yarn there that I didn't bring home with me that I very much could have if I had given myself the opportunity to. But I'm trying to practice moderation. Moderation is good. My third obsession, final thing for this episode, is bralettes. Not bras, but bralettes. They're the things that all the teenagers are wearing that stick out of their shirts, and they look very, like, bohemian and adorable and, you know, looks lovely on 16-year-olds who can wear shirts that don't hide all their body parts. I am too old for that, I feel. I mean, nobody's too old for anything, but for me, I feel like it would be a case of mutton dressed as lamb, and that would be no good. However, I have started to embrace the fact that my bosom is rather tiny. It used to be spectacular, it is no longer, and that is fine, because it's my body and I need to just learn to love it. But the trouble is that I've been having the hardest time finding bras that work for my body and look good on my body but are also comfortable to wear. There's no point in a whole lot of bra, because I don't have a whole lot of anything to fill it up with. But at the same time, I like a lot of support. I don't want to have no support. They're still there. And so I just, on a whim, bought this lacy little bralette because I thought, oh, that's pretty, and it's sort of, you know, sexy and whatever. It's super comfortable. And yeah, it basically means I have no boobs whatsoever because there's no padding, no nothing. It's not got a wire. But they're bloody comfortable, and they look kind of nice, and if I just embrace the fact that I'm not busty, it's fine, right? Like, I don't need to be busty. I can be other things. There are other things about me that are worth celebrating. But anyway, so I am on the hunt for bralettes that I can A, afford, B, find in a size that works for me, because, you know, fit is important. Ease is important. Too much ease. They don't have any support. Too little ease. They smush you down completely and make you look completely flat-chested. So I've only found this one that I really like, but I am... Unfortunately, the lace is a little itchy, and that is not a place you want itchy lace. I mean, it's fine, but it's a little itchy. So I'm looking for softer ones, and the hunt is on. I'll find some. The great thing is that they're a really trendy thing right now, so they're gonna go out of fashion, which means it's gonna be hard to find them in the future, but it does mean that loads of them are gonna go on clearance soon, which I like. Anyway, so I'm excited by that. I'm excited by having a little bit of motivation to embrace the body I have instead of mourning the body I no longer have or being jealous of other women for, you know, having a stereotypically gorgeous body or whatever. It's something that makes me feel pretty, and that's good, right? It's always good to feel pretty. Pretty being a completely arbitrary thing that we all define for ourselves, but it's always good to feel whatever your version of pretty is. With that, I'm going to leave you, and I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. I hope you have a wonderful time, that you get to spend time with the people and pets and maybe just the alone time that you love, that you get lots of crafting time and you're able to maybe come participate in the thing along, or at least participate alone in your head, doing some self-improvement type goals. I will catch you on the flip side. See ya.